welcome back to the 9 till noon show. It's Michaela Clark in this morning for Greg Hughes. Going to a couple of your comments now. I live in the north and pay £2,000 per year in rates, so my bin collection is not free as you have mistakenly claimed. I live in the north as well, and what I was saying was we pay our rates and we get our bins, and our bins are collected and emptied every week. We don't pay an additional charge, whereas here in the Republic there is the property tax and then they have to pay for their rubbish to be collected every week as well. So there's no additional fee on top of us paying our rates in the north. It all comes under the one, whereas it's a weekly fee or monthly, however it's paid for in the Republic. Another listener says, is it legal for someone to refuse your cash and request a card payment? This seems to be such a common thing now, where people don't accept cash. And I don't know if there is any rule, or you know, people can set their own rules, their businesses, whatever, and how they deal with this if they can refuse a legal tender of cash. I'm not 100% sure. I think there's still a bit of a grey area there, but it happens so often now, and particularly, say, if you go on holiday somewhere, they would say to you, no, it's card only. I don't know if it's a protection thing for them, because I was in Paris before and they actually had a sign up and they said, we're card only because of robbers. They said that they've been robbed so many times that they don't carry cash on site anymore, and that was their reasoning for it. Good morning to you all. Just a message, or a rubbish with a positive side. There were hundreds of people around Carrickfinn and Donegal Airport over the weekend, including camper vans, tents, cars, vans, etc. People of all ages. I walked 6 kilometres around the area this morning and the whole area was spotless, which is a credit to all who visited. Thank you all so much. It's really much appreciated. That comes in from a local resident of the area, and that's great to hear, because we do hear it attributed to so many visitors as well as locals dumping the rubbish. We don't know where the rubbish comes from, so we can't pinpoint exactly who it is. But that's great to hear that there were visitors there over the weekend, and I'm sure there was plenty of local people using the facilities there as well. So it's great that that's a positive story relating to rubbish. Hi, I was walking Father Hegarty's beautiful walk yesterday and it was messed with horse poo. It was awful. We need bags with us for dogs. Should be the same for horses. Hi, Michaela. My favourite beach in Donegal is Rathmullen and it's been packed every day. I've been there, unfortunately. So are the bins. It's a disgrace to see people trying to use them, but they're all overflowing. Surely during hot spell, they should be emptied. Another listener has been in touch. I want to thank the Gidore Fire Service. Thanks to them, I still have my home. This is thanks to Noel Rua and the help of others. Yesterday, they worked tirelessly. My heart goes out to people who do this type of work. I am so thankful to the fire services. I still have my home. That comes in from Henry Meehan, Michelle and Holly. That's a lovely message. And the Gores fires are just crazy. I can only imagine the fear when one breaks out, and they do tend to be in areas that are close to residential homes, so it no doubt is an extreme worry for people. And I suppose especially whenever we see the good weather, the fear is there, you know, will a fire break out? And especially if it's an area that is susceptible to these types of fires.
The 9 till noon show is brought to you by Letterkenny Credit Union. Digital loans now available. Apply online or via our app today and get your loan transferred directly to your current account.
So earlier this year, after much campaigning for legislation not to be brought in, the Irish government agreed to change Ireland's triple lock system, which required the approval of the United Nations, the government and the Dáil to deploy troops. This led to much concern over the country's neutrality, and on the back of this, a neutrality roadshow has been taking place across the country and it's coming to Donegal this week. To tell us more, I am joined by Niamh Rinn, a peace activist and programme coordinator with the Transnational Institute in The Hague. Good morning, Niamh.
Good morning.
So, Niamh, what is your view on this? What led to you taking this roadshow on the road?
Yeah, so I suppose we've been watching for the last number of weeks and months how, in the, you know, coming from Leinster House and also coming from the media, there's been an awful lot of misinformation about the situation with Irish neutrality, about what's at stake if we remove the triple lock. And we really feel that the Irish people have not been included in the conversation. There hasn't been any conversation, and a lot of the information that's been coming from the government has been very misleading and disingenuous. And so the roadshow is really about a people-led initiative where we're going out to, you know, communities in towns and cities around Ireland and really having a conversation about where Irish neutrality is at, what's at stake if we remove the triple lock, and, you know, trying to inform people, you know, why this is an issue that's relevant for them. Will it impact them going forward? So this is really about having a conversation, opening up a space where people can pose questions and hopefully get some answers on concerns for an issue that's, you know, really, really fundamental for many Irish people. We've seen, you know, poll after poll has consistently shown that Irish people support neutrality, even with, you know, lots of the media and the government kind of really putting forward this idea that neutrality is outdated and needs to be revisited. People consistently support Irish neutrality. So we really want to bring those people into the conversation and make sure that, you know, there is space for those views and that going forward, you know, the government will really hear from the people that we want to keep the triple lock because it is a safeguard at a time when the world is really in a moment of global instability and war. Ireland has maintained peace and neutrality. We, you know, we've not been affected in the same way that other countries have. And our triple lock has really kept us safe. So, yeah, that's kind of what led to the idea of the roadshow. We started in Kinmare in Kerry. We also went to Ballylongford. Then we were in Shannon and Ennis in County Clare. We were in Galway. We were in Cork last night, and then we're heading up Mayo, Donegal, and on. So we've over 22 stops, and lots of interest from people who really want to get into this discussion about neutrality.
And during your events that you have already held, what has the feedback been like? We know this is a highly political issue, but the people on the ground, are they aware of this? Do they understand it fully?
Yeah, so we've had lots of concern. Maybe one woman in particular, I remember, who came out to the event in Kinmare. She was really concerned because she has family members in the Irish Army, and just really fearful that the triple lock is a safeguard. It keeps Irish troops out of war. It means that Irish troops can only be deployed on missions that have a UN mandate and that are driven by peacekeeping. And she was terrified. You know, you could see that she was visibly quite emotional when she shared with us that she's really afraid that once the triple lock is gone, her family members may be deployed on an Irish mission overseas with an EU battle group. We've also had in other locations in Ennis, we had a peacekeeper who came out and, you know, he was visibly upset because he said, you know, I served as a peacekeeper very proudly for, you know, the United Nations with the Blue Helmet in Lebanon, came under fire from Israel. This was not in the most recent events, but in a few years back. And, you know, really upset and also, you know, just disgusted that the Irish government is, you know, turning its back in a way on this legacy that Ireland has of keeping the peace overseas and being a peacemaker on the global stage, turning its back on that legacy and, you know, dragging the country in another direction that the people don't support. So there's lots of fear about what will happen when the triple lock is gone. There's lots of anger also that the people have not fully been, you know, consulted in any way at all. And there's also a lot of confusion because there's been so much misinformation about a supposed veto, and, you know, which the government of, you know, one of the government ministers, Anne Rabbitt, eventually had to accept that the veto actually, as it's being put forward by the government, doesn't exist. There is no veto on the deployment of Irish troops in the way it's being set out by the government. So lots of confusion over why the government is putting forward a narrative that when you debunk that narrative, then it simply doesn't hold water, the arguments that are being put forward by the government.
Well, the government, they have during conversations in this argued that removing the United Nations input on where troops are deployed is important because they keep the decisions then in Ireland. What would you say to this?
Yeah, I would say to that Ireland has only ever deployed troops under a UN mandate. That is something that Ireland itself wrote into Irish law under the Defence Act in 1960. It's been the position of the Irish state since the foundation of the state and since we started sending troops overseas. We've only ever sent troops on UN missions. And that is something that we, as an Irish sovereign independent state, this, you know, that's an imposition that we put on ourselves. In the context of the Nice Treaty, when the people voted no in the first Nice Treaty, we voted no because we were concerned that by voting yes, we would be dragged into EU military structures. And so in order to get us to vote yes the second time round, the government introduced what was known as the triple lock, which means that troops can only be sent overseas if there's a UN mandate. So that's an imposition that we won, actually, as the people. So that it doesn't take away sovereignty from us. It actually reinforces our sovereignty because it's something that we brought about in the context of a referendum. It's also, I mean, what, if you look at what happens if you remove the triple lock and you send Irish troops overseas without a UN mandate, you know, which missions are you then thinking of sending Irish troops on? Because on the international stage, the only international body that is tasked with the responsibility for international peace and security is the United Nations. So if we, you know, why would Ireland as a neutral country seek to deploy our troops on any other mission that didn't have a United Nations mandate? So it's not an imposition that's coming from outside. It's something that Ireland has consistently written into Irish legislation by, you know, the will of the people, that we would only participate in peacekeeping missions within the United Nations. And that's something Irish people are very proud of. And we've heard that in the different places that we've gone to. People are very proud of our legacy, you know, with blue helmets, with blue berets, with the UN. And it's not the imposition that the government frames it as, you know, a Russian veto. There's no such veto. Under the Defence Amendment Act 2006, Irish troops can be deployed on UN missions that have a mandate either from the Security Council or from the General Assembly. So that's written into Irish law, you know, on the back of a commitment given to the Irish people in the context of the referendum, as I set out. Also on the veto, there's only ever been one instance ever that a veto has been imposed on a peacekeeping mission, and that was by China, and it was a mission in Macedonia. And when if there's a veto and it's only ever happened once, then the mission is wound down and the mission finishes. So to argue that if we remove the veto, we could then stay on with our troops in that mission, that simply doesn't hold water because the mission finishes. If there's a veto, a mission finishes. And also just in the research we've been doing on the veto, we've never found any instance ever in any of the 39 vetoes that Russia has over the trajectory of the Russian Federation at the United Nations. There is no instance ever of a Russian veto inhibiting Irish troops from participating in a peacekeeping mission. So the arguments being set out by the government, they simply don't hold water. There are 11 UN active peacekeeping missions at the moment around the world, and Irish troops can participate in those missions without any problem. So it would be much easier if the government came out and said they wish to remove the triple lock to deploy Irish troops on EU battle groups, and we could have a discussion about that. But instead, the government has concocted a narrative about a veto within the United Nations, which simply, when you pull it apart, it does not hold water.
But ultimately, they aren't going to make a decision where they are going to put troops in an area which is of grave danger. I presume that there will be a lot more to be considered in relation to this.
I think that I would prefer not to. I mean, if they're not planning on doing that, then why remove the legislation which inhibits them from doing so? You know, if they're not planning on sending troops to conflicts and war zones, why are they removing legislation which keeps Ireland out of war? I think it's important and necessary also to reflect on the direction of travel that Ireland has been going in the last few years, where Ireland now participates in EU military structures. So, for example, at the end of March, 139 Irish troops participated in an EU battle group training mission, which took place in Hungary, and it was led by the Germans. So this is 139 Irish troops being sent to Hungary to participate in a German-led EU battle group training exercise. Those battle groups are training to be deployed to countries outside of the EU in conflict and crisis situations. So I really don't know that I would trust that the government does not have, you know, up its sleeve. If we're participating in the training missions, the logic is that we will be deploying once these battle groups are active in conflicts around the world. Otherwise, we wouldn't be participating in the training missions. And it's also worth mentioning that when we were in Hungary participating on that training mission at the end of March and beginning of April, Benjamin Netanyahu was also in Hungary. You know, you had Hungary remove itself from the International Criminal Court in order to receive a man who was wanted before the court for war crimes and genocide. We were there as part of a German-led battle group. So this is Ireland, you know, really abandoning its neutrality and aligning us with countries that are front and centre in, you know, promoting Israel's genocide, even to the extent that Germany is backing Israel before the International Court of Justice in the case of genocide that's been taken by South Africa. So by removing the triple lock, the Irish government is freeing up its ability to send troops overseas. And I think just on that point, you know, we have seen how successive governments in Leinster House over the last number of years and decades have, you know, really been disastrous in terms of housing, in terms of home, you know, homes, hospitals, healthcare, education. You know, the country is going in a really bad direction. You know, we heard this morning record level rents, over 2,000 euros is your average rent price now in Ireland. We cannot trust the government with the well-being of the people. You know, we've seen that with the record numbers of homelessness, you know, record numbers of people on hospital trolleys every year. And so why would we trust the government?
And Niamh, do you see that there ever could be a situation where the government could roll back on this, or they're too far involved now in this?
I mean, yes, of course, they should really, you know, the demand really is that they stop, you know, because they have taken legislation as a proposal now, cabinet. They can stop that. And that's why we're trying to galvanise, you know, people on the streets, you know, writing to their TDs, getting on the local radio stations and really calling on the government at this moment of instability and you know, war normalization and normalization of genocide, that we would be saying, stop, keep the triple lock and really reaffirm Ireland's neutrality, including, you know, stop US military using Shannon Airport. You know, we have a situation where the US military flies on a daily basis through Shannon Airport, and those planes will often travel on to the Middle East. We know that the United States is the main supplier of weapons to Israel as it carries out a genocide. And we know that they're flying through one of our airports. I mean, I'm from County Clare. I've been down to Shannon Airport. I've seen US military planes on the runway down there. So really, keeping the triple lock is a bare minimum, but we really need to go much further in terms of, you know, upholding our obligations under international law in terms of neutrality. Often there's this idea that neutrality is this wishy-washy issue and it's not really set out in international law, when in fact it's very clearly set out in international law. And, you know, the US using Shannon Airport as it arms and backs a genocide is simply not compatible with international law.
And as you outlined there, Niamh, there are so many issues that feed into this conversation on neutrality. But if other countries were looking in on us now, what would your fear be in relation to neutrality, how they would view Ireland then in the future?
I mean, I think that this is a question for the Irish people. Other countries that are looking in on us, they will have their own interests. You know, but I think this is an issue for the Irish people, and this is about Irish sovereignty. I think that if there is the idea behind neutrality is that it is a strategy by which you can promote peace actively by encouraging diplomacy. So any country that's looking in on that and critical of it, you know, that's then bad faith. I think neutrality makes warmongers very uncomfortable. I think it makes, you know, we've seen that the European Union, for example, has been pushing war and genocide as a matter of policy. You know, we saw that Ursula von der Leyen has consistently aligned with Israel and failed to call out the genocide for over, you know, 20 months now. So if they're looking in on us and being critical of Irish neutrality, it's because we, you know, we're failing to align with their warmongering efforts. And, you know, we should be proud of our neutrality and we should hold it up as a beacon of hope. And if there's countries looking at us in a disapproving way, well, they would probably do well to look at themselves and look at the, you know, where they stand on driving war and conflict.
So the Neutrality Roadshow is coming to Donegal this weekend. On Thursday, you're in Annagry and Donegal Town on Friday at the Abbey Hotel at 8 o'clock and in Annagry on Thursday at 7 p.m. in Scullbowl on Pubble. So do people need to register in advance, Niamh?
No, so anyone and everyone is welcome to come. And that's really, really important. People shouldn't feel like, you know, they need to register in advance or they need to come with a certain level of knowledge or they should be on one side or another in terms of neutrality. This is really about having a conversation. And, that, you know, we've had that in the different places where we've gone. We've had people coming from all different backgrounds, people who've been peacekeepers, people whose families are in the military, people who've come who, you know, they've got young children. They're worried that their children may be dragged into war. So this is for anyone and everyone. And the idea is that there will be a conversation. Most of the events have been running to, you know, between 2 and 3 hours because mm-hmm. people are so hungry for information and, you know, looking to find a space where they can express concern and have a, you know, have a debate and a discussion. So we encourage anyone and everyone is welcome to come out and you know, join the roadshow and participate in the debate. And then with that information, go and, you know, speak to family members, speak to their work colleagues and really generate discussion on why now more than ever we need to protect Irish neutrality.
Niamh, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Watch the show live now on YouTube, Facebook and at highlandradio.com.
Welcome back. It's Monday's 9 till noon show and it's Michaela Clark in today for Greg Hughes. Now, high levels of confidence in Ireland's electoral system have been indicated in new research in the National Election and Democracy Study. Some 94% of respondents agree that elections are conducted in accordance with the law and 88% said that elections were well managed and that election officials are fair, while 96% of voters claim that they are confident that their ballot papers were secret once they put them in the ballot box. I am joined by Professor Gail McElroy from the Department of Political Science at Trinity College in Dublin. Good morning to you, Gail.
Good morning, Michaela. Nice to be here.
Good, good. So in relation to these findings, what's your view on it?
I think we should be relatively happy with the outcome. People have a lot of confidence in Irish democracy, in the electoral system, and they're very well informed. And in particular, I think it's quite notable in comparison with findings in other countries, what confidence Irish voters have in the system.
Yeah, I actually didn't expect these levels to be as high, which is quite comforting that people do believe that when they're asked to vote, that they are having a proper say in forming our councils and forming our government.
Yes, there's very high levels of what we call political efficacy. People, 80% of respondents felt that their vote mattered in influencing decisions being made by the government of the day. And that would be very high by international standards. So people feel quite efficacious that they count in the system. And that's a sign of a healthy democracy.
And the study also showed that Irish voters are knowledgeable about aspects of the voting and democratic process, which I suppose this is positive in terms of campaigns that run ahead of elections, and I suppose maybe the election campaigns that candidates are running themselves over the years, that this has improved.
Absolutely. So we ask a battery of kind of knowledge questions in these surveys. They're quite standard, and 60% of people got 5 or 6 of the 6 questions correct of those who voted. Now, there are patterns in this. Younger people tend to get fewer of those questions correct, but that's not surprising. As they become habituated to the voting process, their knowledge will increase. But yes, it's very impressive. And there was only 1 of the 6 questions that a majority of people got wrong. The requirement, is it a requirement essentially that you have to bring your polling card to the station? It is not, but 51% of people answered that it was. And that's understandable. That's kind of a complicated question.
And in terms of those who didn't vote or didn't understand the process, what was their reasoning?
So these surveys, they tend to get a lot of people who participate in them tend to have voted. So 85% of the people who responded to this survey, which was a random survey that was conducted face to face, said they had voted. Now, as we know, only, you know, turnout in the last general election was about 60%. So there is a bit of a differentiation there. And there's a whole bunch of reasons for that. But we were very interested to know why people didn't vote. And so about a quarter of the sample, you know, voters who didn't vote, who were eligible to vote, the reasons they primarily gave for not voting are that they had work commitments or they were away on the day. And in Ireland, it's harder to vote than in many other countries. For most people, you have to be available on the day and turn up on the day. We don't have extensive postal or electronic voting like in other countries.
And do you believe then that these findings, they should form a review of how the voting process does take place?
Yes, and that's underway. So there are variations across the world. You know, some countries have compulsory voting. That's not on the table here. But certainly countries like the United States and the United Kingdom have moved to make the barrier to voting lower. Particularly the introduction of postal voting would certainly increase our turnout. To be borne in mind, of course, that the turnout, which was officially about 59%, is probably understating it. As we know, the electoral registers aren't quite as clean as they should be. So even given how hard it is to vote in Ireland, the turnout rate is quite high by international standards.
And have you seen a difference in this on previous years? Have you compared the stats?
Well, this is the Electoral Commission has within its remit to conduct these wonderful surveys, and they're well funded. In the past, they weren't as well funded, and they were pieced together by a bunch of academics. So we don't have this high quality data over many years, unlike in other countries which have it for 50 or 60 years. But I think this forms a good basis going forward, and we'll be able to compare turnout and knowledge with increasing ease as time goes forward. But there isn't anything particularly unusual about these results. There's nothing particular that stands out. I would say there, you know, the media usage, there are some interesting findings there. Those that use traditional media, such as local radio stations or TE newspapers, tend to have greater faith in the system than those using non-traditional, newer online media sources. And we'll be able to track that across time.
Yeah, because I suppose in our most recent election, social media was a huge part of that. And in some instances, the false information being spread was crazy. And I suppose all that has to be taken into account. But I did notice a separate report recently, and they revealed that radio and TV, that people are still following them more closely than social media, which I did fear. So it is positive that people can differentiate between that.
Absolutely. And the major source of information when you ask people in this survey on what influenced their vote, it's RTE newspapers, traditional media. Now, that may change over time, and there are definite age effects there. Younger people are more likely to use non-traditional media, but it does underscore the important service being provided by the public broadcaster and local radio stations.
You mentioned earlier the postal vote system here in Ireland. Is there anything that you believe could be changed specifically relating to that that could improve it?
If you want to increase turnout, you know, you have to lower the barriers. Most people in Ireland, you know, it's easy to register now, much easier to register than it was in the past. You just go online and it can be done quite easily. But having to turn up, you know, the hours of the stations are quite long, but it's on a particular day. And it's only exceptional that people, like people in the armed forces, people who are genuinely ill or in certain in institutions, that can easily use postal votes. So if we moved towards kind of lowering the barriers to voting, we would definitely increase voting for sure.
And in terms of the influence on parties or candidates that people were voting for, is there any trend there?
I'm not entirely sure what you mean, but
Would there have been an influence? Did you survey people that their influence and who they were voting, was that based on their own opinion, or did that come from, say, a family voted for a particular party over generations?
Oh, yes. Sorry. Excuse me. Yes, people tend, the main influence is the party brand. And a small number of people have always voted for a particular party. They're party loyalists. But the majority of people are not close to a particular party. And what we see across the course of the campaign is that particularly the smaller parties, the smaller left-wing parties, can sway voters over the course of the campaign and win their votes. On the other hand, most people don't change their mind over the course of the campaign, which is quite interesting. Now, of course, we're asking voters to kind of assess the reasoning for why they voted and did they change their vote after the fact. And, you know, that's a difficult level of cognition to engage in. So we have to take these results with a pinch of salt.
Yeah. But all in all, it is positive findings in relation to our voting system at the minute.
Absolutely. And I think one of the big things is that 75% of those who voted said they were very interested or somewhat interested in politics. And I think we should be very pleased with that. Irish people are informed and they're engaged and they have faith in the system.
Yeah, and it's very important now to build upon that.
Absolutely. We can't become complacent. And in particular, you know, with the diversification of media sources and kind of some perhaps nefarious activity online and in alternative media, we need to keep an eye on that and monitor it.
Highland Radio weather updates with McIlhenny's. Get set for summer with all new arrivals dropping every week, from fashion to footwear and homeware to cosmetics. Discover more in-store or shop online at McIlhenny's.com today.
Today's weather, patchy cloud will build through the day with the chance of a few isolated showers. Cooler than of late with highest temperatures of 15 to 19 degrees. We'll still take them temperatures though, I think. A few of your comments now. Just wondering, did anyone watch the Eurovision? Interesting that Israel came second in the Eurovision. Makes you wonder what the world is thinking about Gaza and why it's allowed to happen. Did you watch it? Let us know what you thought on 086 60 25000. I didn't watch it over the weekend. I actually think there wasn't as good of a buzz about it this year, and I didn't record it, or I didn't even see clips on social media, which do be going around, but maybe it's because we didn't reach that stage. I was at the Fan at Arch yesterday. Not only was there dog poo on the beach, but disgustingly, I came across human excrement on the beach at Dobeg Strand. Absolutely shocking beyond belief. Yeah, that is terrible. I know there's so many different situations that could reason for why that was there, but surely there are facilities nearby, or someone could have went elsewhere. That is a horrible discovery. Just to let you know, there's no recycling centres in Glenties or Ardrahan. No deposit return scheme in Glenties either. We've been chatting about rubbish on the show this morning. Another listener says, I can't understand how Irish Water are issuing water conservation orders, but car washes are still in operation. I've contacted the council and they said there is nothing they can do about it. I know there is a ban in parts of Donegal at the minute due to low reservoir levels, but I don't know if these car washes are operating in those areas or elsewhere in the county. Could you hear someone concerned about our young army personnel? Why would we sacrifice our young people's lives to face sure death with the lethal weaponry of war today? It's complete folly putting our troops on the ground against this. The Irish government have an ace up their sleeves that they are not telling the people. That is, if a young person leaves school with no job lined up, they will automatically be enlisted into the Irish Army. I don't know where that came from, but is there... I don't think that will be a case. There's a simple answer to this. Let all Irish troops go on strike until the government get the message that Ireland don't want any part of wars. And we were having the discussion within the past hour about the neutrality roadshow that's coming to Donegal this week. Another listener says, please keep a triple lock. Our government should not change it. Who wants their son or daughters at war? So I think people should stand up and be counted and stop the government in this. Garda checkpoint yesterday at Kilmacrenan. Long tailbacks. How necessary is this on a Sunday afternoon? Families trying to get to beaches with children, etc. We won't see a checkpoint all week again. I suppose, you know, the guards are trying to monitor the roads, and it doesn't matter what time of day or what day of the week they monitor. They're trying to improve road safety, but I take your point there all the same. Neutrality is a coward's way out in today's world. Ireland backed out in the fight against fascism and the genocide of the Jews in World War II. Is this country once more preparing to hide behind the skirts of neutrality in any other just wars? Finally, for now, for those who support Irish neutrality, what would be their answer to an attack on Ireland by Russia, who, in the event of a full-scale war, see this island as an open backdoor to Western Europe? Now, the presidential election will be taking place later this year, and a few hopeful candidates have previously joined Greg on the show. Today, though, I am joined by Dunica McGuigan from Limerick, who is vying for this role as well. Good morning, Dunica.
Good day, Malahatsu. Good morning to you and to your listeners, indeed.
So, Dunica, we'll start with, have you been thinking about this now for some time?
I have been thinking about this for a long time, actually, and I've been specifically planning to engage in the presidential election for about the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. So it's not an overnight decision.
And part of your campaign or your mission, if elected president, would be the role as guardian of the Constitution.
Indeed. For the most part, the president in Ireland has very, very little executive power. And one of the few things that the president, where the president does exercise some executive power, is in the possibility of referring legislation to the Supreme Court. And this is a constitutional matter. So for the most part, that's the role has been limited just to doing that. Now, I have identified, particularly in recent years, a number of areas where our constitution is being undermined, increasingly, I think. And to a large extent, your elected representatives, TDs, senators, ministers, there aren't many votes in dealing with constitutional issues. I mean, they're very, very busy dealing with day-to-day matters, responding to the needs of constituents, responding to world affairs and whatever. And there's very, very little time, really, for elected representatives to, you know, give the maybe consideration that's necessary to matters relating to our constitution. The president does have that role. But as I said, it's to a large extent has just been limited to whether or not she or he would refer a bill to the Supreme Court before signing it into law. What I'm suggesting that as president, what I would do is establish a forum that would be ongoing, looking at, and not just our constitution, but the general health of our democracy. Democracy the world over, I think it's not too difficult to see that democracy is under serious threat in so many parts of the world. And we're probably reasonably lucky here for the moment, but I think we need to be very, very aware and not take things for granted. So I'm suggesting the president would be the patron and perhaps even organizer of an ongoing forum, as I said, to look into constitutional issues and issues relating to the health of our democracy.
And would this mean that if somebody wanted to change parts of the constitution, that you would consider this?
Well, that could certainly be part of it. And we'll say the most recent attempts or efforts to change part of the constitution were the two referenda that we had last year on the family and care. Mm-hmm. And really what happened there was they really weren't thought out well enough. Enough time and effort wasn't put into framing these amendments to the Constitution. And of course, from time to time, as life changes and society changes, we do need to make amendments to the Constitution. But effectively, they were poorly framed. And ultimately, I think something around certainly it was well up in the 60s, if not about 70%, they were rejected by the people. And that's in spite of the fact that more or less all the major political parties encouraged people to accept them, to vote yes, yes. And the people very rightly rejected those two amendments. And this is as I said, this is an area that I feel the president could give more leadership in. Not that the president would make all the decisions and sort of, tell people what to do, but just give leadership
but you'd be open to,
and focus. And of course, you'd have one. It would have to be subject to, a lot of checks and balances. It's not something, and it would only be an advisory forum. And we've had these in the past. I mean, we've had fora where there was a citizens' assembly, we'll say, for example, brought together to try and gauge public opinion with regard to the marriage equality and previously then to the abortion referendum, the change to the Eighth Amendment. And those worked very, very well. What I'm really suggesting is that you have something like that ongoing on a continuing basis. Doesn't have to be a sitting committee that's employed or anything like that, but that there would be maybe a couple of administrators and then there would be regular meetings, there would be varying agenda depending on what would be considered important at a particular time, but that the president could give more leadership in this area. The very first thing a president swears and declares on taking office is that they will maintain the Constitution of Ireland. And I'm taking that statement very, very, literally and very, very clearly, and really adding a little bit of deepening the role, if you like, of the presidency in giving more leadership with regard to our constitution and our democracy.
And Donica, you're coming to Donegal, so anybody interested, where can they meet you this week?
Well, I'm hoping to be where I'm beginning my campaign, this is very much a new endeavour for me. I'm taking a little bit of extra time in Donegal to sort of figure out how I will make all of this work. So straight away, I'm being interviewed on Highland Radio, and I'm delighted to have that exposure. So thank you, and some friends in Donegal who put me in touch with you and some of the other local media. So Donegal, for a number of reasons, I'm a particular fan of Saint Columba, otherwise known as Colum Kill, Garton, and all the associations of Colum Kill with County Donegal. I've done a major, major study on the Book of Kells, so my love for Donegal is deep on a number of levels. My wife and I also honeymooned in Donegal about 44 years ago as well. There are a number of reasons. Now, I'm actually planning to tour Ireland, the whole country, over the next 5 or 6 months. And I'm basically doing this on a shoestring budget. So at the moment, my caravan is sitting behind me here. I'm just a little bit north of Gort as I head to Crieshla.